Hello and welcome everyone to
Top of Mind Florida.
Has a nice ring to it. Michael Williams here with my dear friend and longtime colleague,
Brian Crowley.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. Of course, many of you already know one of the great newspapermen in Florida. Wore out a lot of shoe leather on the political beat here and around the country for the Palm Beach Post over many decades.
And you and I spent 14 years together doing To The Point, WPTV's public affairs show every Sunday, and it was great. And now we have Top of Mind Florida, and we're looking forward to the guests that are going to be here and the great topics that we're going to discuss.
You're raising a great point, and our first guest coming along in just moments, Jessica Nemeth, who not single-handedly, but with 40, 50,000 followers, and probably really more than that, helped change the arc of what's happening with Florida State Parks. Should be our guest. You don't want to miss it. Instructive story there. First of all, a couple of top-of-mind items befitting the name of our podcast.
Well, one of the big things is the battle over the tomato. We have Florida farmers who grow those big hamburger-sized tomatoes, really furious because the cherry tomato is starting to take over. And a lot of people really love cherry tomatoes. And now the price of cherry tomatoes is going up because of the tariffs. And there's this battle going on between Florida farmers and over the Florida tomato, and it's going to be ugly.
Knowing you, I thought, there's always a punchline with you, but this is a serious punchline for
it
some.
Is.
And then there's a political headline, a Politico saying that Casey DeSantis being plumped for governor in 26 by none other than her husband, and he was reported to have said now there's zero chance of that. What's going on?
Yeah, there seems to be less and less interest in Casey DeSantis running for governor. That didn't last long. It lasted about as long as his campaign for president. But we have Byron Daniels, the congressman who's really leading the charge among Republicans right now for governor. And then we have David Jolly, who was a Republican who became a Democrat, and he's running for governor. And then we have Jason Pizzo, who was a Democrat, who is now an independent, and he's running for governor. It's going to be a crazy governor's race over the next 18 months.
No lack of things to talk about on Top of Mind Florida. Jessica Nemeth, our guest, next. Back now with our guest, Jessica Nemeth, the self-described grassroots girl who the State Parks Preservation Act, Governor DeSantis, has it on his desk, said he's going to sign it, overwhelming support. Here at Top of Mind Florida, thanks for being our inaugural guest, and we'll lead it off with Brian Crowley. What's top of mind question-wise, sir?
Well, you grew up in Tequesta, which is right on the edge of the state park. What got you involved in this issue?
The month before, in July of last summer, I had just stepped down. I had been for the past 5 years on Tequesta's Environmental Advisory Committee and was the chair and had worked closely, with our local government on a lot of our environmental and conservation issues and making sure our comprehensive plan was up to speed. And so I'd kind of had a deep dive for quite a few years, which set me up very nicely to have a lot of time and resources for when I saw, the proposal come forth. I knew we had to do something. I knew there needed to be a lot of noise, so to speak, a little bit of a ruckus, some good trouble. And I was, member of the Florida, I am a member of the Florida Trails Association. Mm-hmm. I, know the Club Scrub Gang. I, know the Native Plant Society. I've grown up in Tequesta, so I know so many people that use and love the park.
So remind people just how close we were to this actually happening and reminding them that we're talking about hotels, golf courses, and state parks all over the state.
Potentially up to 175 state parks, right, Brian?
And
well, there were 17.
Very little time.
It was very little time. And, I was fortunate to have the opportunity to speak to James Gaddis, who was the whistleblower that leaked the unit management plan proposal for Jonathan Dickinson, and thank him because, again.
And back up for the uninitiated, most people are aware. Back up to Brian's great question at that beginning of what came your way that was suddenly revealed that you all said, we got to fight this.
Right. So I can remember seeing on Facebook one day somebody saying, there's a plan to add golf courses into Jonathan Dickinson State Park. And, I'm like over my dead body. That's not going to happen. But I almost didn't even believe it until I saw it again somewhere. And we realized that there was a very real plan that had been leaked. The Tampa Bay Times, Max Chesnas and Emily Mahoney have been phenomenal. And they were the first to start covering the story. And we realized that within less than a week, there were meetings scheduled for these 7 or 9 state parks at the time, I believe, that had these proposals mm-hmm. that the public were completely unaware of. It seemed like the parks were pretty unaware of them, and they were for development in our state parks of lodges and pickleball courts and golf courses. Mm-hmm. I had been told that I think there were 5 maybe at the time, or 7. I just remember an odd and even number, but the majority of the parks were proposals previously that had maybe also appeared through the Rick Scott administration. Mm-hmm. The first time around when this happened. And then the others, the pickleball courts, were supposed to just kind of be, to throw us off or to, thrown in there, I guess. But the golf has been a repeating theme that we've seen. And so I think that, when I found that out, which people quickly reminded me of, and I wasn't aware. I just had my daughter when that happened. And I've had people say, well, where were you the last time? I'm
busy.
So sorry.
A little busy,
but
yeah.
I'm very grateful for the people that helped stop it then. It's my turn now.
Were you surprised at how bipartisan? First off, let me just say the secrecy behind this was incredible.
Yes.
That they were ready to land this thing very fast with very little public input. But once that public input started and members of the legislature started, raising Dickens about it, too, it became very bipartisan. Did that surprise you?
No, I wasn't surprised by that. I think I was surprised when I found out that this proposal had been discussed the year before and that legislators were aware of it. Coincidentally, the two that sponsored our State Park Protection Act bill this session, but we're very grateful for them doing so.
And you're talking about?
Senator Gail Harrell and Representative John Snyder.
Yep. Martin County.
To his credit, though, Representative Snyder has been he's been quite an ally to us. He immediately came forth and let me know that he did have that meeting and was very forthcoming. I think the problem with Senator Harrell for some of us was that she was interviewed and acted like she had no idea about this, and it wasn't until they found out that the meeting had come about that she told us, she had had it. So that was a little frustrating. Representative Snyder didn't make any public statements prior to letting us know that he'd been there, so I appreciated that. But he has been very open, available with text, email. I've met him in his office, and he's grown up here too, and I think he very much understood the need to listen to his constituents. So again, kind of going back, we had these proposals come forth, and it was 8 days from start to finish that we were able to get Governor DeSantis to say, all right, well, we're going to stop this for now.
Talk about that, because to me, it's always that alchemy. You've covered so many things across the state, as have I, and sometimes issues just coalesce. And at one point, I think you had 40 or 50,000 best friends as followers all of a sudden.
Still do.
I think there's instructive 49. Lessons there for people listening or watching this podcast, wherever they are in Florida or beyond. Talk about, as you look back, the pivot points that you think allowed that energy, that grassroots focus and force and voice to come together so quickly. And what are instructive lessons there for other groups that are trying to do the same thing when it comes to environment?
Well, I've worked very closely on this bill with Eve Samples of Friends of the Everglades, and one of our favorite lines is endless pressure, endlessly applied.
Yeah.
And so, for me, having my experience working with our local government, I'm aware that it needs to be multifaceted. You really need to fire up everybody, because the grassroots have to start making phone calls and emailing and showing up at meetings, and you need, your local representative or your elected officials to reach out on their behalf or on the town's behalf. And we saw that, some letters were stronger than others, some were angrier than others, but you need, for us, the bipartisan support, was critical. And I think that that's really what has given this issue and the bill the leverage that it's needed and caused all of these legislators to say this is the people's fight and the people's bill, because again, these are our public lands. So, I think that it's really raising a lot of noise. Right. Unfortunately, I've gone in the correct way and, you know, made a public comment, and I've emailed, and I've done, and it's, you know, there's a lot going on out there. They have a lot of things to take care of. So it's really, you know, a testament to the endurance and the persistence and the concern of the citizens of Florida to stay on top of these issues, because they're confusing and hard to follow, and, you know, it can be challenging. But I think that, you know, getting in those rooms and speaking to your elected officials is the only way we usually get things done, you know.
And there's power with moms and dads, sons and daughters out there.
Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, sure. Oh, yeah.
Oh, and just a quick acknowledgement. Post-retirement, I wasn't involved in this issue. I'm doing some conservation-related messaging post-retirement with Friends of the Everglades. So you mentioned Deep, so I thought I should mention
that. Yes, and I really cannot give them enough credit for, you know, partnering, helping. I think she and I would both say, you know, we wouldn't have made it this far without each other, because they've had very strong messaging. You know, sometimes the conservation groups or the environmental groups, you know, will be opinionated, but then they don't kind of have strong letters or statements that asks of representatives and senators. There's politics at play always, right? And board members for a lot of these different groups. So I've had the ability, being the grassroots girl, to not have to necessarily ask for permission from anybody, you know, but that hasn't meant that I haven't been in close communication, you know, with the people that Benji Stunt, you know, who's been amazing.
Palm Beach County Environment.
Yeah, I mean, unbelievable with his videos and educating the public. And again, Eve, you know, Vote Water and Gil Smart and our Indian River Keeper, Jim Moore, you know, these are people that have been 100% behind fighting this and not stopping until the governor signs, which is, you know, been very big, because again, social media was so helpful, but it's also the algorithm. You know, people may see, and especially with the legislative session being the way it is with different committee stops, people don't always see things on the same day they're happening, you know, or they see things a little late, or they think some good news means everything is good news. So trying to keep everybody informed has really taken an army. It's taken a village.
how do we get to, I mean, the park initiative was really great, that where people were willing to step up and defend the state parks. But when you look overall at the natural areas in the state that are not state parks, that need but still need to be preserved to protect our water supply, to protect our environment, to protect our wildlife, how do you get the grassroots involved in that?
That's a great question. And I think that, you know, a lot of grassroots are already there. I would give credit to a lot of people and groups that, you know, are passionate and have been helpful. I was fortunate to kind of get this, you know, position of being able to have a very loud voice, I guess, you know. But there are so many groups doing such wonderful work. They're often just understaffed or underfunded. But, you know, I think that, and just kind of going back to, you know, after we were able to stop that, we knew we needed some sort of a protection in place, and Senator Harrell put forth Senate Bill 80, which was wonderful. And I think that one of the first criticisms or critiques that people wanted to see is they wanted to see our state forests and the wildlife management areas included in that. And we had to understand and listen to our legislators and those involved in the park system that that would complicate things too much, and that obviously we want all of our public land and conservation land protected. You know, you see a lot of third-party easements and conservation groups coming in and helping with that, just like here in Palm Beach County. But, you know, we removed that language just because, again, of the complicating factors of different agencies managing different areas, but would like to use the State Park Protection Act template to then do the same with the forests and our WMAs.
It's interesting because you and I have talked about this. You wish you could take everybody and deposit them into the middle of the Everglades or the middle of some of the areas you're talking about, because you were a little girl who went around in Jonathan Dickinson State Park. It was, when you talk grassroots, it really was, into the suns and daughters and the moms and dads and grandparents out there. And yet sometimes there's that disconnect about trying to create that. So I think trying to take the ABCs from Grassroots Girl and build that environmentally when we continue to have more and more people pour into the state. Mm-hmm. But is that just capturing lightning in the bottle, or do you think it can be recreated?
You know, I of course think it can be recreated, and I think we see wonderful examples all around the country and the world of people creating pocket parks, buying empty lots. I think we hear and see there is a demand for land. Like, people love their wild Florida and their natural spaces. And, you know, in Florida, unfortunately, the same gentleman that introduced the golf course idea to us, also Mr. Rick Scott, also did away with our Growth Management Act and, you know, the Department of Community Affairs. And I think that Floridians are getting frustrated at our elected officials seemingly being more concerned about people that don't even live here yet than they are about the residents and about the areas that we love, the wild Florida we're trying to protect. So, you know, I do think, though, that because of the parks debacle last summer, you know, this has kind of come to the forefront, and people are, you know, much more aware now that something bad can happen to these public lands, and we need to make sure they're protected.
You know, there's another issue that's coming up. The Florida Wildlife is going to, the Florida Wildlife Commission is this summer is expected to decide on a bear hunt, mm-hmm. where 187 bears will be killed, hunted, using planting food. So when they come to eat the food, they'll be killed using packs of dogs to hunt them. And we haven't had a bear hunt since 2015.
Yeah, and that was a bad
they were
one.
Very rare.
That was a terrible,
yeah, they're not very well managed when they do these. So what do you think about the issue? You know, we have problems with manatees dying, and that's a threatened species, and we've had record numbers of manatees die. Florida panthers are another threatened species that we lose
nearly
a lot
extinct.
Of. Is that part of the overall problem that we have when we're dealing with the parks and natural wildlife areas and the environment in general?
Well, I think that the problem is that we have conservationists that are sportsmen and conservationists that are more environmentalists. And to me, I think, you know, we have to remember that hunters and fishermen are the only recreators that contribute financially to conservation. So the money from the licensing and the taxes for a lot of the ammunition or the things that they use, you know, fund conservation, whereas walking and hiking and bird watching and none of that actually gives back financially.
Right.
You know, it doesn't fund our conservation. So I'm very mindful of that. And I did, you know, tread into some sticky waters, especially in the Protect Jonathan Dickinson State Park group in supporting Amendment 2, which was something that was a very contentious issue. And people
remind our viewers for those.
Amendment 2 is the right to hunt and fish.
Right.
And so,
which passed overwhelmingly.
It passed overwhelmingly. And, you know, I think a lot of people were misinformed in believing that our statutory right at the time was a constitutional right and not realizing that the legislature had the ability to take that away from us should they vote to do so, whereas putting it into the Constitution would put it in the hands of the people. But I think that, again, you know, and I've seen it with this state park bill, too. There are words that trigger people and make them very concerned. And I think a lot of people were concerned that we would go back to traditional methods and, you know, be able to club or use things that, you know, the netting or things that have been outlawed for, you know, years, decades, and that would not be coming back. So, you know, there was a misunderstanding with that. And from mine, I have learned that other states have been able to use that right to hunt and fish to say, you know, you're allowing a declining species population that we have a right to. So it's the onus is on the state to maintain that healthy habitat or maintain a healthy species population. And then also, of course, hearing from people like Betty Osceola in the Everglades, reminding me that where she lives, there are people that still hunt and fish for food. And that it's an hour and a half to the grocery store.
Sure.
That having the right to do that for a lot of families is very important. So, you know, that kind of a thing. So were there issues where I think some of the conservative conservationists feel attacked by the more liberal conservationists? That to me is kind of the biggest issue, because I'm looking at this saying we all want the same thing. We want to protect wild Florida. And I feel like coming to the middle a little bit and everybody trying to, you know, work more closely together, you know, is better for Florida.
So we have the State Parks Preservation Act. It will keep, according to the language, hotels, golf courses, pickleball courts, tennis courts away from our 175 state parks. Although, again, not all of them were intended for that development right away. I imagine your phone rings off the hook, right? Or I guess phones don't ring off the hook.
I know what you mean. 40. Yeah, I had a phone. Yeah.
Doesn't sound right to say your cell phone rings off the hook, but it does. And I imagine yours does, with people saying, how do you take what you did and extend that moment to Everglades issues, to other things? How do you plan to continue those voices at that grassroots level on some of the kind of issues you pointed out, Brian, and continue that movement? What kind of calls you get? What are your thoughts and plans?
Well, we're not celebrating yet. This is my first, you know, thing that I would
say.
We're
waiting for this to be signed.
Yeah, we're waiting for this to be signed still. And I think that, again, there have been a lot of wonderful relationships built and established, you know, through this process. And I think that legislators are seeing the support they get when they are, you know, working to protect the environment that their constituents love, you know, and that's something that, you know, again, with Representative Snyder, I know Senator Harrell is terming out, so there wasn't a lot for us to use there, so to speak. Representative Snyder, who plans on continuing on in politics, we hope, you know, this was a big deal, you know, and for a lot of legislators, it's your people cared passionately about this issue, and they're watching. We're watching and seeing who is supporting and who is not. And, you know, unfortunately, Senator Harrell's bill was not a strong bill. It was not a good bill. And that messaging, you know, gets a little lost in things. But the way that was written initially was calling for disturbed uplands to be used to the maximum extent practicable, which for us that love Jonathan Dickinson, that's Camp Murphy. Mm-hmm. That's any, you know, I was on a scrub jay hike there last week, and yeah, there are some little military remnants, but we have successfully restored around them for the past 75 years. You know, so that was concerning, talking about, you know, maximizing things or substantial harm or significant harm, very subjective language that worries those of us that know how words can get twisted and used. And so we were very grateful when Representative Snyder amended House Bill 209, and that became the much stronger of the two bills, which Senator Harrell refused to acknowledge.
You made reference to Camp Murphy. And for those who don't know,
yes,
Camp Murphy was a secret radar facility during World War II. There was like 1,000 buildings, 6,000 people there. They left in 1944, and by 1950, it was all converted to Jonathan Dickinson State Park. But you could still see remnants of
And
Camp
really
Murphy.
Quite a point of pride for Jupiter, you know, because, again, we were at the forefront of radar, you know, in the war, and we had thousands of people training, you know, at that base. And so, you know, the bill, one of the things that the protection bill is also calling for is an advisory board that would be put together should any sort of management or development proposal come forth. And I had suggested that there should be a local historian that should be included on the advisory board if there is, you know, every unit management plan for every park lists all of the archaeological and cultural historic resources within it. So we know where they are. They're already noted. And we can obviously see when we overlay development proposals if they're going to conflict. So had we had, for example, Josh Lillier, the historian with the Jupiter Lighthouse or the Jupiter Historical Society there, he could have explained how important Camp Murphy was and what a point of pride that is for our community. And while we very much respect the Tuskegee Airmen, we certainly don't think that we should be destroying Camp Murphy to honor somebody else. That didn't make sense. And the same to the same notion, I would like indigenous representation if there are archaeological sites that are falling under those plans. So we weren't able to get that wording in the bill, although I had, you know, multiple people on record saying they thought it was a wonderful idea and were going to do so. But the language as it is right now says that at a minimum the advisory board shall include, and it lists the necessary positions, and I would like to see that, you know, included as well.
Final top of mind thoughts for you this day as you walk your beloved Jonathan Dickinson State Park and as you look to the battles won and the battles still ahead?
I think that once we get this bill signed and we have the parks protected, we need to address the funding for our state parks. I think that's obviously a very big issue. I think that, you know, expecting to get wonderful rangers that are passionate on $30,000 a year starting pay is, you know, ridiculous. So I definitely think that we need more staff. I think, you know, I will commend the state, you know, AmeriCorps was destroyed recently, taken out of our parks, but the state has kind of risen to that occasion and is going to address those issues through a state organization or by regrouping them, I guess. But I do think, again, it's just the funding, and we see things falling into disrepair, and we know that people in the past, elected officials, when they see that, will suggest that maybe that is cause for change or development. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, fixing the areas of the process that allow these things to happen is what the people will want to see. They want to see their state parks protected. And so we have some work to do. They're only 80% self-funded, so we need all of the assistance from anybody willing to donate, preferably to the friends groups, so the money goes directly to the park. But we have some things to take care of still.
And I suspect you'll be on the front lines of all of it. Jessica Namath, thank you so much for being our inaugural guest. But before you go away, you're going to get to see the wheels spinning up close. Most people outside of me don't get to see this, but for years on To the Point, we'd finish off with what we call the Crowley Closer.
Oh, yes.
And so this, see.
Mm-hmm. It's a great burden.
Your fame
procedure. It's a great burden.
So again,
it's a great burden.
Yeah, you always looked burdened.
Well,
the Crowley Closer on our inaugural edition of Top of Mind Florida. Big thanks to you.
Let me thank you for being here and thank everybody who participates in this. And, you know, one of the great issues of our time, one of the biggest, that the legislature had to deal with this session, as important as the parks were, this may have been even bigger. The Mockingbird won. The Florida Mockingbird was almost taken out of being the state bird with a big push to make it the flamingo. I love flamingos. But, you know, after decades of the mockingbird being the state bird, I think it's a little outrageous that you would try to cast it aside.
Don't say
for
me.
For the sake
I didn't
of
do.
The flamingo.
I know who did, but it wasn't me.
Yeah. Jessica would like to be on the record about that. And well, we're glad you got that off your
top of
mind.
One of the great battles in the Florida legislature.
I know Jessica was quick to say, wait a minute, I was fighting other battles. Don't put me on that one. Jessica Namath, we greatly appreciate and hope we can invite you back. Top of Mind Florida, you're going to be able to find it on YouTube and every other way you can get a podcast out. We're doing it. Brian Crowley, good to have this inaugural edition under our belt. We expect and hope we'll have you back.
Thank you. I'd love to be here, and I appreciate you guys having me.
Thank you for your time and perspective. Thanks, everybody, for being here for this first take of Top of Mind Florida. Sign off, sir.
Thank you for joining us, and subscribe.